All right. Good morning. It's great to be here with you guys. As I mentioned at the beginning, Bert is out of town. He's concluding the conference, and I just got back from my conference, so I got this Sunday. And if you don't like this, spoiler, I'm preaching next Sunday too. So I guess it's your choice. But anyway, I wanted to explain a little bit of something that I put in the bulletin. I titled this sermon, I Am Bryce, particularly on accident, because I didn't midweek when I was coordinating with Jeff about like what I wanted to call this. I knew that it was going to be in the I Am series, and then I put Bryce, and then that actually just became the title. So if you're wondering like, oh, this is a pretty like selfish sermon, it doesn't intend to be. It's where we're going with this. And I thought what I could do this Sunday to explain this idea of like I am Bryce, what I want to do is share probably the most embarrassing story of my life. I assume that's somewhat therapeutic, and hopefully it'll be beneficial to you, but I want to share the most embarrassing story of my life and tie that into a scriptural individual, a scriptural character that I connect with the most, being Peter. And so what I want to do is get those red lights on. I really feel great right now. But what I want to do is take you back to when I was trying to decide where I was going to college. I'm from a small coal mining community in Western Kentucky, and I always had big dreams of living in the big city. I knew I wanted to go to Lexington or Louisville or even maybe go to school in Nashville, as I've shared before. And so what I decided to do was to go to the booming metropolis of Searcy, Arkansas. And it kind of happened on a whim. Some of you don't know Searcy, apparently. It's a small community. Anyway, but it's a cool place. But so what happened was I was going to Lexington. I was going to the University of Kentucky. And then like right before I was supposed to pack my bags and go, an admissions counselor from Harding called and said, hey, we've got one spot that just came open in this dorm. Do you want to go? And I said, sure, that sounds great. And then that night, I had a very awkward conversation with my parents about like financial aid and all that fun stuff. And I ended up going to Harding. Like, that's kind of how I ended up at Harding, was just like on a whim. And so I went to Harding like knowing no one. I had one person that I knew that was an upperclassman, but she was it. And it's Kim Tolliver. If any of you guys know Kim, Kim's one of my favorite individuals on this planet. But she's not here. I don't know why I gave her that reference. But anyway, so like, I only knew Kim, and that was it. And so I go into Harding basically not knowing anybody and starting over. No one from my high school went there. And so I'm at Harding, and you're doing that kind of awkward thing where you're making friends and you're learning about yourself and you're trying to meet new people and have new social groups. And what happens in a lot of those situations, if you're like me, where I'm not always super self-confident, you kind of compromise a little bit. You're like, well, I don't really know if I want to do this, but like they're going and I need friends. And so like you'll go with them. And that's kind of where I found myself. I didn't do awful things, but I just kind of was like, well, you know, I don't really like this, but since they like it, I'll go with them. And so I found myself in this awkward situation where there was one group of friends that I really wanted to hang out with. They're a great group of people. They're still friends to this day. But if you're going to get to the end of the story with me, you're going to be like, why are they still your friends? But so this group of friends, and they were going to a church that I'd never been familiar with. I had never gone to the church before. I grew up Church of Christ. I've gone to the Church of Christ my whole life. I've mentioned before that like we were vacation Christians. We're like, when we went to a vacation, my mom called the local Church of Christ to see when their services were. And that was fun. But so we did that. And so, like, I was always, like, that's all I've ever known. And I'm telling you that because my friends, this group that I wanted to be a part of so desperately, they didn't. They went to a community church. Now, if you know my story and if you know who I am, like, pride is such a big part of, like, and not, like, the good pride, but, like, the bad pride is such a big part of my story. Because in this moment, I had a chance to say, look, I would love to go to this church with you guys. Like, I want to be friends with you, but, like, I've never been to a church like this before. Like, would you, you know, tell me kind of, like, what worship looks like? What's the sermon look like? What's the service kind of? How does that go? And I didn't. I went in being like, I got this. Like, I'm going to show these jokesters what church is. And so I remember I even volunteered to drive that day. Like, guys, I got this. I'll find us the best parking spot. We're going to do this. It's going to be awesome. And like for some reason, I have taken charge of this thing because of my pride. And I'm very self-aware with my pride. Like there's a good chance that if you've ever asked me where I went to school, I'll say, I went to Harding University. And then before you can be like, oh, that's nice. I'll say, but I did my master's at Lipscomb. And normally, if I'm like, if I, for some reason I think I need to give you more, I'll be like, and I did it under 3 years. Like, I know that I do that, and it's so weird, and I'm very aware of, like, the pride that I struggle with. So I'm in this moment, and we go to this church, and I was telling Whitney, like, I had this joke about how dark the church was, and then this is kind of ironic that not all of our lights work except those right now. But we go into this church, and it's dark. And I've never, you know, been into that before. Like, I've never gone to a church where, like, all the lights were off when you walked in, but just kind of stage lighting, other than today, which is super ironic. But so we go into this church, and it's dark. And I can even, like, remember these flashbacks to my home congregation that I grew up in. We had this weird period where, like, during communion, they would dim the lights, but then people were like, that's awkward, let's not do that anymore, and so they quit doing it. So the rest of the service was lit the whole time. But at this church in Searcy, I walk in, and it's dark except stage lights. And there's music playing, and I'm like, okay, this is different than my home church. And we go in, and we sit in, like, what I call, like, the safety seat. Now, I'm going to give a little, like, church terms that I use that you guys probably don't use because you're normal and I'm weird. But, like, the safety seat, it's those end row seats where you can always see, like, an exit. And so, like, if you're in a church setting and you're like, okay, I'm not sure how I feel about this place, I'm going to sit in the safety seat so I can get out of there if things get weird. That's a safety seat. So we find ourselves sitting in the safety seat, and which is just like an end aisle kind of situation close to an exit. And worship starts. And there's a worship band, and that's something I've been around in my life. And there's a worship, it was great. It was, the worship band was going on. And then, you know, somebody, I think his name was like Pastor Mark, gets up and he delivers this passionate 45 to an hour sermon, which is like, if you've been to Chennault before, not something that we do here either. But it was like, you know, 45 minutes, but it was good. And the whole time I'm like, man, I've never experienced anything like this before. It's I'm out of my element. I've never, you know, experienced worship like this, a sermon this long. But there's this point to where he says, he stops the service, and he says, this is the part of our service where we do communion. And once a quarter, we serve communion here. And I remember, like, that pride thing that I shared a moment ago, the pride comes back. I've been uncomfortable. This has been a different element to me this whole time. But when that guy said communion, I was like, oh, yeah, Bryce is back. I got this. I do communion every week. I can do this. I can show these people how to do communion. And so I remember that the communion kind of service starts where they start playing a song. And this is where the story gets embarrassing. Because most of this, for the most part, you're like, this isn't embarrassing. Why are you telling this story? This is why. So, like, communion starts. They start doing the worship for communion. Everybody's told to stand up. And then two ushers start walking towards the safety seat, kind of the end aisle situation, kind of just for those exit situations. So they start walking down the aisle, and I make eye contact with this usher, and I realize he's coming for me, which, I mean, maybe he's heard that I take communion every week. I don't know. And so he comes to me, and he just kind of does this kind of air traffic controller situation where he's like this, which I presume, like, oh, we're about to take communion. And so I look, and I'm realizing that I'm the only person in motion at this point, which makes me realize that I'm going to take communion first. And so this air traffic control usher, he's pointing the way down the aisle, and it's kind of like a walk of like, oh no, like, what am I doing here? But that pride is overcoming me, where I'm like, I know communion. I do this all the time. Like, I could tell you the scriptural references. And I'm walking down the aisle, and I make eye contact, and it's a different setting too. So you're walking down the aisle, and there's a husband and wife that are going to serve communion. And the husband is holding a plate, and it's got a loaf of bread on it, and his wife is holding a cup. And so I'm walking down the aisle, and I make eye contact with the husband. And I kind of do, if you're familiar with kind of, you know, the way men's brains work, if there's somebody that you know, do the head up. You're like, what's up? But if it's somebody that you don't know, go down. I did not know this individual. It's just, think about it. It works. I did not know this individual. And so what I did, the down head nod, he returns it. So I'm thinking, okay, I got this. We're on mutual ground. We've just become acquainted based off male standards. So I do the head nod down. He returns it, and I start walking towards him. And I get right in front of the guy, and he has the bread on the plate, and he kind of lifts it up to me. Now, I knew at this point in my life, as well as like the maturity level that I've reached at this point, that there was no way I was supposed to eat this entire loaf of bread. But as I've said, like, I've not been around a service like this. I'd never experienced this. And in just a moment, I'll explain the type of communion. But I've never been exposed to this. And so I look at the guy, and we kind of do this eye contact thing of like, hey, buddy, I don't want to embarrass myself in front of my friends. I don't know what's going on. Can you give me something? And so I do what most of you probably did just a little bit ago, where I kind of do the I'm looking for the one that I want communion situation. And so I do that, and he does the like nice form kind of deal. And so I look at the loaf of bread, and I've got my fingers ready, and I pinch some of the bread, and I take it off. And he gives me another nod, like, wow. You know, like, in my brain, I'm thinking, he's like, great pinch, man. Like, the form is there. You got a great, you know, amount of bread. And I'm sitting there, and I'm looking at this, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I did it. Like, I didn't even look at my friends, but I assumed they were just in wonder of, like, what I've just done. And this is kind of where things go south. Now, I want to step out of the story really quick and explain to you what's going on. This is a form of communion called intinction. And what intinction is you have the loaf of bread, and you have a separate vessel for the juice, for the different element. And you'll take the bread, pinch it off, dip it into the juice, combining the two elements of blood, of the body of Christ and the blood of Christ, and then you take the communion that way. It's called intinction. Churches do it all over the place, but apparently none that I have ever experienced. So back into the story. So I take the bread, I pop that guy into my mouth, eat it, and then I just take one step over, and now I'm standing in front of this guy's wife. Now, she is not giving me the same facial read that the husband is. And for a lot of different reasons. But remember, like, communion service has just got rolling with this guy here. And so I step in front of the woman, and I'm like, I'm waiting for, like, you know, does she not know how, like, kind of men do the head nod thing? And I'm waiting for something, and nothing. And, like, she doesn't even, you know, remember, he kind of raised the plate a little bit. Nothing. And she's holding this, like, chalice. If you're, I guess the best imagery would be like Indiana Jones, like where it's like, which cup is it? And it's like, it's the wooden one. And you're like, well, it's Doug, because he's a carpenter, but the bad guy picks the wrong cup. It was like the wrong cup situation. So, like, kind of a really big, fancy chalice, like filled with grape juice. And so she's just holding it like this. And in my mind, again, like, I was just a dumb college kid. But in my mind, I was thinking, like, does she not know that I know how to do communion? Like, for some reason, she has not, you know, extended me this cup. And so what I do is, as she stands there confused as to why I'm the first person that's come to her without bread, I take the cup from the lady. Hold on, it gets better. I take the cup from this guy's wife, and I start to drink. Now, at this point, like, again, like, this cup is full. Like, communion has just started. We just kick things off. And so I start drinking. In my mind, I'm drinking as much of this grape juice as I possibly can. And in my mind, I'm thinking, like, I'm going through the motions of, like, this is the, like, least efficient thing I've ever been a part of. If every individual that comes through this service gets this much grape juice, like, what? And honestly, I mean, and I'm going through this, and I'm thinking, like, what in the world are these people doing? Like, what is their budget committee? It's like the wheels have fallen off. And I'm going through, and I'm looking, I'm just drinking, and I'm thinking, like, okay, like, and there's a point where I'm like, enough. Like, I can't drink anymore. And I consumed about 2/3 of the grape juice in that cup. Now, this is kind of where it gets good, because when I take the cup, it was I can't emphasize, like, how big the cup was, but when I take the cup down, the look of horror and just, like, shame on this woman's face as the cup comes away, and I'm like, what is her deal? Like, I just crushed communion here. And so I take the cup down, and I hand it back to her, and it's, you know, like, 1/3 is left for this entire congregation, which I was like, well, this is going to be a long service if we've got to refill and hopefully clean out each thing. And I hand it back to her, and then I'll never forget, I turned the corner, and like with my head held high, I was like, crushed it. That was awesome. I did communion excellent at this congregation. And I get halfway back to my safe seat. And you hear that knock on the mic, like doom, doom, doom. And, you know, Pastor Mark, whatever his name was, he said, guys, we're going to go ahead and pause service real quick. And I remember thinking, like, well, duh, they've got to refill the cup. You know, like, of course you've got to pause it. And he says, you know, guys, we're going to go ahead and pause service real quick because we've got some visitors here today. And I remember thinking, like, who messed up communion? You know, like, who did this? And then it hits me, like, that David Nathan moment of, like, David, you are that man. And the light bulb comes on, and I was like, I was not supposed to do communion like that at all. And then what I do, and this is where it shows that I'm just like a true Christian, because I remember I drove my friends there. What I decided to do was leave. I left those people at the church. Like, this is pre-Uber, pre-Lyft. Like, I assume they're still there. I don't know. But I left, and I remember leaving and just in, like, panic and just, like I'm sweating. And I remember driving back to campus and going to my dorms and looking at, you know, the friends that I lived with and seeking their brotherly Christian, you know, like, affirmation. And they didn't. Those pagans ridiculed me. They made fun of me. For at least a week, I was the tail end of their jokes. And to this day, I am still, like, if I'm in Searcy and I drive past that church, my anxiety goes up. And one day I know that I'll have the confidence to go in and be like, I'm sorry, I was that kid that you guys probably still talk about. But I tell that story for a lot of different reasons. One, I'm still working through it. It's still a therapeutic moment for me. But I tell that story because, like, I remember leaving that place and being like, there's no way I can ever step foot in a church again. In my mind, like, I feel like they had a constant contact situation where they just, like, blast emailed every church and was like, there's this kid. He has no idea what he's doing, but he thinks he's got it all figured out. And he's going to ruin your service somehow. He'll figure out a way. But I tell that story in a lot of different settings because, like, I love it. Because, like, it shows that, like, pride overcame me and I was embarrassed out of my mind. Like, again, I still get anxiety when I go past that church. But I think a lot about how this story connects to this I Am series that we're doing here. Because Jesus speaks a lot of things into our lives. I am the resurrection. I am the life. I am the light. And we as Christians, as followers of Christ, are supposed to take in those I Am statements and live those through our lives. But what I find as I try to navigate life and not embarrass my wife and child every day, what I find more and more is that I'm like Peter. I find myself in situations where, like, I can give you the right answers. I can tell you the right things to do. I can even give you, like, the scriptural references to back up my claims. But then there are moments in my life where I fall short. Or, like, maybe I deny, or maybe I just don't get it all the time right. And so when I thought about this series of I Am and what it means to live into those words, I want to just take a break, I guess, and just to say it's okay to be like Peter at times. It's okay to have these answers right, but then get things wrong too. Because the beautiful thing is with the story of Jesus is we're still invited to the table. That even though we don't have it all together, we don't have all the answers right, that God still, through Christ, invites us to the table and says, look, you got it wrong today, but it's okay. So what I want to do is just fly through a few examples of Peter's life where he got things right, but then where he got things wrong. So let's go to the first one. This is my favorite example, Matthew 4, there we go. This is my favorite highlight of Peter. This is the beginning of Peter's relationship with Jesus. It says, as Jesus was walking beside the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon called Peter and his brother Andrew. They were casting a net into the lake, for they were fishermen. Come, follow me, Jesus said, and I will send you out to fish for people. At once they left their nets and followed him. This is the first glimpse of who Peter is that we get in Scripture. It's this flash of excitement and encouragement. And we get it, and we see that Peter gets who Jesus is just from this brief encounter with Christ, Peter says, it's worth it. And maybe you're sitting there today and you connect with that moment of like when you first encountered Christ. Maybe it was through, you know, a family member, or through an event or whatever, that moment where you're like, I'm in. It doesn't matter what it's going to cost me. Like, I'm doing it. I'm going all in. And that's what we get here in our first kind of glimpse of Peter and his relationship with Jesus, was that he's all in. We've talked about this before, and if you know the story of Peter, like, he's giving up everything. His identity is a fisherman, and Jesus is like, I'm going to give you a new identity. And it's going to change your expectations of life and what you think are important. Like, it's going to do amazing things for who you are and who you will become. And so in this brief moment, we see that Peter just leaves everything and says, yeah, I'm in. And I want to be like that. There are moments in my life to where I know these things are in front of me where I can go for it. And I want to have that excitement of Peter. And there are times in my life where I've done that. Let's go to the next one. The next one is after the feeding of the 5,000, if you're familiar with that story, where Jesus takes just a little bit of bread and some fish and he feeds a magnitude of people and he's healing people and he's just with people and then he needs a break. And so he goes out on this mountaintop and he tells the disciples, you guys go ahead and go get in the boat. And they go across and they hit these really gnarly waves and they're afraid. And so Jesus comes out and they think he's a ghost. If you're familiar with the story, they see this presence coming onto the water and they think it's a ghost. And this is where it picks up in verse 28. Lord, if it's you, Peter replied, tell me to come to you on the water. Come, he said. Then Peter got down out of the boat, walked on the water, and came toward Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid and beginning to sink, cried out, Lord, save me. And you're familiar with this story, where the water is just scaring these disciples, and there's this ghost. And I love Peter's inquisitive nature. I love that he just wants to know who it is. It's like this almost like fearful confidence that he has, where he wants more than anything to believe that this individual that they believe is a ghost to be Jesus. And I love that Peter's way of determining whether or not it's actually Jesus, like if I were, you know, in Peter's shoes, or if I was one of the other disciples, I'd be like, let's ask him a question first. Like, we don't have to get out on the water. But Peter's first thing is, tell me to come to you on the water. And then we see Peter's confidence. Peter got down out of the boat. Eugene Peterson translates this as he jumped out of the boat. I think there's a lot of us that think that Peter was just like, all right, let me get my footing. I'm going to figure this out. But like, there's this expediency too to the story where Peter gets out of the boat, walks on the water and came toward Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid. This is where I really start connecting with Peter, because he knows the answers. And he wants to follow Jesus, but there are times where he's afraid. I debated telling this story because it's kind of, I don't cry a lot. It's not that I have like a black heart or anything like that. It's just, I can't get there. I don't know if something's wrong with me. But when I think of this, when I read this story and I speak it into my life, when I try to apply it to my life, it says, but when he saw the wind, he was afraid and beginning to sink, cried out, Lord, save me. I think a lot about like my last Sunday at the church that I left. Like, I was super excited to be here, but I was afraid. I was afraid about leaving. I was terrified. I remember going in the restroom in the youth room and just bawling, being like, what if these new kids hate me? What if they make fun of my height? You know, I had all these weird insecurities, but I remember just being so afraid to get out of the boat and to test the waters. Like, I was comfortable where I was, but I remember coming here and just being excited, but there was this moment of fear. And I get it. And when I read that passage, I always think about that story because I was excited, but I was also afraid. Let's go to the next one. Chapter 16, when Jesus came to the region of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, who do people say the Son of Man is? They replied, some say John the Baptist, others say Elijah, and still others, Jeremiah, or one of the prophets. But what about you, he asked, who do you say I am? Simon Peter answered, you are the Messiah, the Son of the living God. It's this moment where Jesus is asking them, who am I? And we see that Peter gets it right. I mean, he hits a biblical home run on this answer. The other guys are just saying, you know, what they've heard, but Peter gives this confident answer of, I know who you are, and you are the Messiah. Peter gets it. Peter also struggles. As we see in this next verse in John, and I had to use John, the other gospel writers don't call out Peter. John doesn't care. He doesn't hold any punches. He's like, whatever. It was Peter. We saw you do it. That was fun. Anyway, but then Simon Peter, who had a sword, drew it and struck the high priest's servant, cutting off his right ear. The servant's name was Malchus. Jesus commanded Peter, put your sword away. Shall I not drink the cup the Father has given me? You see, there's this struggle that Peter has with the world and like the spiritual world. He knows that Jesus is the Messiah, but he also wants Jesus to be an earthly king. And he wrestles with that his whole existence. And here in this moment where Peter, just verse, you know, chapters before this, he says, you are the Messiah. And later in John, he's cutting people's ears off. Just one ear, I suppose. But he's cutting an ear off because he's defending Jesus. And Jesus is like, you've missed the point. Chapters before this, Jesus tells Peter, I've got to die for this to be fulfilled. And if you're familiar with that story, Peter rebukes Jesus. He's like, surely, Lord, you should not have to do this. And this is where Jesus tells him, get behind me, Satan. And so there are moments where Peter gets it, and there are moments where Peter misses it. And then unfortunately, let's go to the last one, probably the most popular mishap of Peter. Simon Peter and another disciple were following Jesus because the disciple was known to the high priest. He went with Jesus into the high priest's courtyard, but Peter had to wait outside at the door. The other disciple, who was known to the high priest, came back, spoke to the servant girl on duty there, and brought Peter in. You aren't one of this man's disciples too, are you? She asked Peter. He replied, I am not. And he does this two more times, and you know the story, how it goes. But I wanted to look at the life of Peter for a lot of different reasons, to show you, one, it's okay to make mistakes. It's okay when we have these mishaps. Because if we remember who Peter is, he plays a huge part in where the church goes. And I've thought a lot about these I am statements that Bert's been looking at. And at times, like, they give me hope and they give me joy, but they also put a lot of pressure on me, like, if I'm not living the light. Like, am I really living a resurrected life at times? And you see, when I fail to do that, when I mess up, I become like Peter, and guys, that's okay. Because if I remember anything about Peter's life, and the story that I love the most is the one about the boat. Because Peter has the confidence to get out of the boat. And even when the winds get rough and he falls down, he calls out to Jesus, and Jesus picks him up. And they get back in the boat, and they go on. So if you get anything out of this today, it's that even if you're like Peter, if you're like me and you find yourself being like Peter, where you're getting out of the boat and you're falling down or you're saying the wrong things, hopefully you're not cutting anybody's ear off. But if you ever find yourself in a situation to where you feel like Peter, it's okay. Because I believe, and what I see in Scripture through who Jesus is Jesus is going to help you get back in the boat and you're going to go on your way. But you have to trust in him. So it's okay to be like Peter, as we try to live into who Jesus created us to be. Jeff, let's stand and sing.